This is Dolphinville Radio, brought to you by Photon.net, your internet service provider. Dolphinville Radio, welcome.
Angels are the miracle workers of the universe. Some ask, what kind of energy is angelic energy? They bring soothing light and grace to all who ask for their intervention. Angels do not have free will in the third dimension as we understand it. They are not of polarity consciousness, so they don't feel the pull of duality like we do. Although they are capable of creating miracles in your life, they may not intervene without your request. Every day I ask angels for help in living my life, in the business of doing, and in the business of being.
Well, this is Douglas Dolphinus. I'm here in Dolphinville, just off the coast of Kona in Hawaii. Once again, interviewing a very interesting person who's here to be part of the dolphin experience and has been coming for a number of years, Maureen St. Germain. Welcome to the show, Maureen.
Thank you.
And I was interested in Maureen's work because she's bringing groups to experience the dolphins and the whales as an augmentation to some of the things that she's been teaching for the last 20-odd years, more specifically, helping people to understand the metaphysics of existence. There's a couple of very interesting areas and techniques that she demonstrates, not the least of which is the Flower of Life series of workshops and special breathing techniques, understanding the way sacred geometry actually opens up gateways of understanding for our higher consciousness, using the sacred tetrahedral balances of the sacred Star of David, as we've all seen in the three-dimensional forms, are known now as the vehicle of light, the Merkaba. And made best known probably in the last 20 or 30 years, starting with J.J. Hertak and then taken up by Drumvalo Melchizedek. So she was here just last week conducting a workshop for the Flower of Life, both levels. And we want to just open up the discussion with her about, what are you doing here with the dolphins? You must have had some really cool experiences that got this on your focus. What was your first experience with the dolphins, Maureen?
Well, my first experience with the dolphins was with Joan Ocean, and Trish and Doug. And amazingly, Joan uses the group to create their own energy. And she asks each group to name their pod. And our group was named the God Pod. And even today, people, Trish will walk up to me. Trish Reagan will walk up and say, "Remember the God Pod?" You know. So my first experience was with Joan, and I had a lot of synchronistic things happening. Information that was coming to me, and then hearing Joan say it. So that made me aware of the fact that the information I was getting was coming from a source that was same or similar to Joan's. And that made me feel very good. It made me feel authenticated. I feel very strongly that Joan's work is really a very high leadership quality on the planet. And so I was very honored to be in her space and to learn from her.
Had you heard about dolphins prior to this, read about her books, or what?
Well, in the Flower of Life, we talk a little bit about the dolphins and how important they are to the planet. And that was really my first experience. I wasn't always gaga over the dolphins or anything like that. You know, I was a farm girl who grew up in the Midwest. And, you know, we were pretty normal. And we didn't do foo-foo stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when
what you see is what you get.
Yeah, yeah. And so my experience with the dolphins really was the pursuit of higher consciousness. I did understand that the dolphins carried a more advanced energy just scientifically by virtue of the fact that they have a larger brain.
Mm-hmm.
I also had read Joan's first book and felt very strongly that her explanation of them coming from another place and bringing their energy here to help mankind was right on the money. It felt so normal to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there was no question in my heart about that. I felt very comfortable with her.
You feel that they're not of this planet then?
Well, I feel that they're of this planet, but they also are much more conscious from another planet.
Okay.
That they're actually carrying on a multiple beings expression. You know, people say, well, how can that be? Or what is that like? And I say, well, think of a chess game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're the king, you're the queen, you're the rook, you're the pawns,
mm-hmm.
you're all the players. And being one doesn't make you less present than the others, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's I feel that the dolphins, they're fully present here in their dolphin energy, and that they're doing something very specific for us
mm-hmm.
on the planet. And their their expression in terms of the evolution of life is more strongly expressed in another energy, like an ET energy,
mm-hmm.
rather than just the dolphin energy.
I see. Well, so you didn't come as many New Agers to the idea that dolphins and whales were, you know, great sages of old holding the energies, but it seems like
no,
they do.
I have never bought into the old business. In
mm-hmm.
fact, you know, Joan says this too, that the dolphins came in the 40s and then time traveled back.
Mm-hmm.
And when she first said that, I thought, wow, if the dolphins can do that, I wonder what I can do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they seem to be inviting us into new ways of thinking about all of those connections.
Yes.
And speaking of connections, I mean, you've chosen the name Saint Germain, and that's a buzzword for anybody who has read metaphysical literature. We know that Saint Germain was a real bona fide person, but then there was another Saint Germain who seemed to come in bringing really, really high levels of information and energy, and this. Since at least in the 20th century, we saw a lot of readings and channelings using Saint Germain. Who was he? Like a 16th, 17th century saint?
Le Comte de Saint Germain, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting story how I came to be Maureen Saint Germain. When I was 11 years old, I was raised Catholic, and we were to pick a confirmation name. And being the little independent thinker that I was, I couldn't find a name that I liked. And, of course, I was getting a lot of pressure from my teacher and the nuns. And I said, I thought I was allowed to choose this name. And they said, oh, yes, you're supposed to choose your own name. And I said, well, I can't give you a name until I decide. I haven't found a name I like. And when I came across the name of the Saint Germain, there was no question. That was what I wanted. And so I feel like Saint Germain has been with me since I've been 11.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 10 years ago, I was doing a numerology chart for someone. And in the middle of creating this numerology chart for someone, I was given a very strong message, run the numbers on Maureen Saint Germain. Now, I hold Le Comte de Saint Germain in such high regard. To me, it was a little too much to just assume and take that name. So I ran the numbers, and I understood the implications of it. And then I said, well, what am I supposed to do with this? Silence. You know, and it's real unnerving when you're hearing messages in your head and then you ask a question and you get nothing. So I swallowed hard and I said, am I supposed to change my name to Maureen Saint Germain? Yes. And I went, well, you know, I don't know, that's a big leap, you know, I don't know, you know. And then at the time I was going through a divorce and my attorney had asked me several times, do you want to take your maiden name back? And I had always said no. You know, I've been this married name for 25 years. No point in changing now. But here I was in this situation where I was being given this directive. So I called my attorney and I said, what if I pulled a name out of a hat and just made up a name? What do you think? And he said, Maureen, I don't think anyone's going to even ask what your maiden name is. Now, how do you spell that? As I'm spelling it, I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm just checking my options. I'm not really I'm not really sure I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, it's a good thing you called today, because if you had waited till tomorrow, it would have been too late. And I feel that it's a signature of the Ascended Masters to put your feet to the fire and then say, well, you're going to jump or not.
And you chose a spelling, at least on your website, the abbreviation of SAINT rather than S-A-I-N-T, or the French, it's S-T. So your website, Maureen, M-A-U-R-E-E-N, S-T, and then Germain is G-E-R-M-A-I-N.com.
Right.
Maureen St. Germain. Any particular reason why you chose, because it's recognizable, S-T as the abbreviation? Or
The primary reason was the numerology.
Okay, okay.
The numerology gave me a master number that harmonizes with my birth date and with my mission. Mm-hmm. And so it was like right there.
Well, that's interesting. And you've had that now for a number of years.
Since 94.
And you were already full-fledged into the workshops that you were doing. But about that same time, that would be about the same time frame that you came to swim with dolphins.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
It was.
All right. So now we're getting someplace. There's a whole wave of new information or elevated sensibilities that came through. And you were able to sort of like step into it, listen to it, use those cues to take you to this next level.
Right.
Yeah.
It's true. You know, and when you first start getting information in your head, and I teach people how to do this, by the way, and I teach people how to validate their higher self so that they can learn. And just to take a side trip for a minute, last spring, I got an email from a woman in Paris. She had taken a workshop from me in New York City, and she wanted to buy me lunch, and she said, I wanted to meet with you to tell you how it has changed my life that you insisted I learn how to connect with my higher self, and you taught me a way to do that and to make it real, some tangible rules on how to do it and to put it together. And she said, because I can make decisions that my friends are in awe. Mm-hmm. And even when they say, you know, their experience says this won't work, and it works for me, they're totally amazed. And she says, I know it has everything to do with following my higher self.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so happy about that.
Hmm.
But you're right. Back then, you know, 10 years ago, you know, you didn't go around telling people what was going on in your head. And even when you looked in the mirror, you only believed it half the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because the other half the time you were sure you were nuts.
Well, there's been a huge mental shift in 10 years' time. I was just thinking not too long ago that the whole mindset that we all carried around, and just as you say, we would allow ourselves to go into those realms of thought, but then we would snap back to get
snap
real,
out of it.
Come back and do our normal left-right lives.
Right, and I was living in the corporate world. I had a corporate job. I was a CEO. You know, I had four children. I mean, you know, I've always had a connection to spirituality, and I've always been deeply spiritual in my belief system and in my actions.
Mm-hmm.
But this part of me was kind of in the closet.
Yeah. Well, the higher self that you help people get in touch with, can that be differentiated from connecting with the Ascended Masters?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I believe very strongly that the Ascended Masters are here as way showers and helpers and teachers who've done this, been there, done this, and can show us how.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're anxious and eager to help us. But we have to ask. Mm-hmm. We absolutely possibly have to ask. The higher self is the part of you that's God, that's deeply connected to God. It's the traditional religion's version of your heavenly self. So when you go to heaven and you're sitting up in heaven and you're, you know, you're fully connected and everything's perfect, that's your higher self.
Mm-hmm.
That is the part of you that's so connected to God, the choices aren't a matter of yes or no, but when and how. You know, it's a different energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I tell people one of the ways to examine how the higher self energy works is if you had someone as a house guest that you really admired, you would. And they said to you, well, tomorrow morning, can I have eggs for breakfast? You're not going to say, well, I don't know, let me see if I've got eggs. You're going to say, when would you like them? Or how would you like them?
Mm-hmm.
So the answer is still yes, but now the variety of it is different.
Well, that's an interesting explanation of it. Well, let's get back to your current trip, your current experience. You brought a group in here and stayed on the Kona Coast, something that you've been doing now for a number of years. How was this different than the years in the past?
Well, for one thing, we had terrible weather.
Terrible
weather. And you, as a native here, know perfectly well to have that many storms in a row like that was pretty interesting. And before we were recording, you had mentioned that they were electrical storms.
Yes, which is even more unusual.
Yeah.
Several in a row, by the way. We woke up, every day there was a new electrical bank moving through the corridor of right off the Kona Coast.
Well, one of the things that I teach is manifestation and how to create your reality. I also believe very strongly in honoring the integrity of Mother Earth. And I don't just assume that because I want something that I can demand it and create it in the reality. So my first rule of thumb is we ask permission. And I tell people who pray for Mother Earth or pray for peace and put it in the earth that's kind of like force feeding a cat. It's not a really good idea. And if you put the food out or put the energy out, Mother Earth will take it. And it stems directly from an experience I had with Drum Below and a group of people. We were in a workshop with Drew, and we were going to create this bubble of peace energy, and we're going to put it in the earth. And Drum Below said, we had to ask permission for Mother Earth. And we all came back from walking on the land, and we had our experience. And he'd also told us to connect with the ancestors. Well, my experience with the ancestors were these young women. And I was so shocked that my experience with them was unusual, that I felt like, let me go first so I'm not embarrassed. Because then if everybody else says they're old, at least then I won't feel like I'm the goofball trying to look different or something. And then Drumble had also said, if one person out of our group of 30 gets no from Mother Earth, we will not put this energy in the earth. And we'd already created it. So it turns out that I was 100% accurate. They were young women, not old. And I said, this was a trick question then, huh, Drumbelow? And he said, yes. And then when my roommate got no and everybody else in the group got yes, that the earth wanted the energy, I asked a question that I teach people to ask. And I say, when you're working with your higher self, there's really only one question to ask. And that question is, what's going on? Because every other question leads you to some kind of bias. If I say, who ate the cookies in the cookie jar, I'm looking for somebody to blame. If I say, why did this happen, I'm looking for a cause. If I say, what's going on, I could receive any piece of information, mm-hmm. and something may surprise me that I was not ready for. And so when I asked this question, the message I got was Mother Earth wanted to decide herself when to take in this energy. At that time, there were people all over the earth who were logging the magnetic field of the earth, and it was all available on a website that was public. And one of the guys in the group, first off, I will say the Drumbler said as a response to me, what happened is I mentioned it to the guy next to me, and thinking that it's just between the two of us. And he says, he puts my hand in the air and says, Maureen has something to share. And so now I'm put on the spot. And Drumbler says, well, if Maureen's right, we'll be able to tell. The energy will spike on the magnetic field, and we'll be able to see it because there's this website. He gives the website name. The next day, I had left Sedona that night, and the next day I was back in my home in Wisconsin and at work, and I got an email from one of the guys who'd gone to the website and said, you were right. There was a big spike at 3 a.m. And on the front page of the Madison paper where I lived, there was a big... I don't know, 8-inch high headline that said, war averted. It was at the time when Henry Kissinger had gone to the Middle East to try and avert war. So it was very powerful then. So now getting back to the permission, and then what do we do in the storm? So we asked for permission to do this work. And on the first day, we had a 2-hour delay. We normally leave for the docks at 7 o'clock in the morning, and we, get on the boats at 7:30, and we're out in the bay by 8 a.m. So we're on a 2-hour delay, and so we did a heavy-duty meditation, and we asked permission for our window to be created for us to get in the water. And we had a phenomenal day. The dolphins came, and the whales came, and there was nobody on the water because if it's not clear first thing in the morning, then whoever's going to do a morning trip normally doesn't go. And at one point, the captain of our boat, Vito, said to me, well, how would you rate your group? Are they determined? And I said, I think that would be a mild word for my group. And then the next day we had a similar situation. We had a one-hour delay, and we did the same thing. The group formed a meditation. We went into what I will call the alternate field, where we asked for permission from Mother Earth to have a window to swim with the dolphins, and we did. Then we skip a day for kind of R&R and just to kind of change people and mix it up a little. And then on the next, that Wednesday, Wednesday night for, Thursday night for the Friday morning trip, I was on the phone with my mother, who also lives here in the Kona area, and she said, well, they're predicting high surf. Well, I've been on the boat with Vito in high surf, and it's not good. Even if the sky is beautiful, if the waves are high, there is just no way you're going to be able to get in the water because you can't anchor the boat.
And you're soaking wet.
Exactly. So one of the women in our group does journey work. And that night, after hearing this news, I said, you know, if there's high surf, it's going to be a challenge for us to even consider getting in the water, even if the storm blows over. So she went into meditation and did a journey. And in the journey work that she does, you connect with your own personal power animal, and then you call in a power animal that you think would be appropriate, and you have a conversation with that power animal, and you see what you can do. So her choice was to ask for assistance from one of the whales. And she spoke with one of the whales and asked if he could hold back the waves so that we could get in the water. And he said, no, it's too big. The energy's too big. So she said to him, well, if you had help, could you do it? And he said, I don't know. We can try. And he put a pod together of six whales that supposedly held back the energy. So the water was as calm as glass.
I was on the water that day.
That day. And then we had an incredible experience, and we came back, and we were no sooner in our hotel when the wind came up from the wrong direction, and it was like this huge, there were palm trees that were bent over in half. Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to run an errand between then and when the class started, and I took one look out the window. I said, I'm not going out in this. It looked terrible. I expected a huge downpour for the way the wind was blowing. And then, all of a sudden, it turned around and went coming back the other way, just like someone was holding a slingshot. And it reverberated out and then came back.
Wow.
And I thought, well, maybe I'm making this whole thing up. So I had a conversation with my mother, who isn't necessarily a member of the choir, and she said the same thing. She'd never seen anything like it before. And, of course, you were there, too, so you were... So then this lady, who was very shy about this work that was going on and really not sure of herself, she's relatively new, even though lots of things have happened to turn her on, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So she asked in her prayer work for a sign that it was indeed what she had done that caused this window to open for us. So we pulled cards at the beginning of the session, mm-hmm. and she pulled the card that said answered prayer. So we felt that was true.
That's
and then
true.
She shared it with the group, but she didn't even tell anybody up until then. Isn't that amazing?
That's a great story. And whether synchronistically she had the idea to do this because there was a window of opportunity and she was responding to that, you often wonder whether you're being pulled towards the destination or that you're pulling the destination towards you. It's really a co-creative process, I believe, where
right.
both
absolutely.
Together.
And what's even more amazing is on the boat that day, a number of people had said to me, how come... one of the things that I do in my work, because I only come here once a year or twice a year,
mm-hmm.
is I ask everybody who signs up to do a daily prayer. Mm. And it's just a little meditation that holds the people who are on the boat mm-hmm. in a sacred space that blesses Vito and his crew and me and my efforts. And we ask for cooperation with the elemental kingdom so that we can have this special window because it is, you know, like a one-shot deal for us. And this woman said, you know, with all the work we did ahead of time, why do you suppose we had this terrible weather? And I said, I think it was to prove that we could work through it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in light of what's been happening recently, tsunami that really rocked the world, And just as a sidebar here, because the tsunami was such a significant natural disaster, how did you reflect on that? What do you think that the Earth was telling us, or the higher metaphysical purpose behind such a world disaster as the tsunami of December 26?
Well, like 9/11, the huge effort that has gone on worldwide to reach out and be one family has been humongous.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly a high price to pay. But the result that we have today, where people see themselves as part of the planet,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and that we all feel responsible
yeah.
to help, is huge.
Yeah. It was a huge upwelling of compassion.
Yes.
And I felt the same thing. 9/11 came to mind because it was such in our faces here. And also when the numbers were running up, and the 144,000 souls of ascending souls came and went as a figure, I'm thinking, well, here's the biblical proportions here. We're being given the sign, if you will, of the changing times that we're facing. And yeah, it's a horrible thing, but on the other hand, it seems as if these people had predetermined that they would have an appointment with this particular happening.
Yes, I have personal acquaintances, a couple who took the Flower of Life workshop with me with the dolphin swim a number of years ago,
mm-hmm.
who were in India, and they were traveling, and they had been sending emails to their, I'll call it spiritual family, and I was on their list. And after they'd sent the second email, I had sent them a little email saying, I just want you to know how much it means to me to be included in your spiritual adventure and being part of your experiences and what you're doing and where you're going. And then the tsunami came, and they had another email like a day or two later saying that they were with, I think it was Alma G, in her ashram in India. And they were in one of the high buildings, and they saw the wave come in, and they were like in shock by what they were seeing. But not one person in the ashram was missing or injured from the tsunami. And then there was a case of a very well-known builder entrepreneur in the Madison area where my home is, who was in India in one of the hotels that was washed away by the tsunami. And on that particular night before, he had gone up into the mountains to camp. And when he came back down, the hotel was gone.
Yeah.
And because he's such a wealthy man and in a high profile, he held a fundraiser, and his promise to the community was that he would triple whatever the donation was.
Hmm.
So you make a donation through his foundation he was forming, and he would triple it out of gratitude.
Well, so those are great stories and a great demonstration of how the humans seem to respond on so many levels. What does bring us into our heart space.
Yes.
You're listening to Dolphinville Radio, dolphinville.com. The dolphins and the whales are, to me, all about heart space.
Yes.
And I would assume that many of the experiences that you've shared with your participants have guided them into these regions of the heart. And some people have identified it as being a divine feminine space because mm-hmm. of the heart aligning itself with the feminine energies. What are your experiences about that? And would you say that that's true? You're nodding your head yes as a
yes.
heart-opening well, space.
Most certainly, when we open to the divine feminine, that does open up a heart space. But one of the things that sacred geometry has taught me
mm-hmm.
is that it's about balance.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the things you and I were talking about before we began recording. It's not enough to have the mental answers. And I believe it's also not enough to just have the heart energy.
Mm-hmm.
That there has to be a balance. Because I believe what we are about is making heaven on earth. It's not that we're going to ascend to heaven or that we're going to ascend in general. It's that we're going to create the evolved, perfected human right here on earth. So then it would be about balance, being able to be fully feminine or fully masculine or both at any time and be able to hold that.
Mm-hmm. There's an integration there.
Exactly.
Well, sacred geometry, particularly the nature of some of the Flower of Life work, goes back to ancient Egyptian mystery schools.
Sure does.
And certainly the Flower of Life itself is ingrained in granite, which they still don't know how. One of my friends, Nassim Haramein, commented that it was located in a temple which was believed to be much older than the temples around it. And it's become one of those obscure archaeological facts because they have no explanation. They sort of stick it in the back of the book. Nobody really wanted to explain
yes,
it.
Yes, and I've been there, and I'll tell you what I think about that. The Flower of Life is on the temple that's further back at Dendera, at the Hathor Temple in Dendera. And the temple that's in the back is believed to be an earlier temple, and it's really not been ascertained how old that earlier temple is. But I find it curious that it's on the upper stonework, and it's not in a place that would be appropriate in terms of a conspicuous place that you would have. As you look at a temple, you know, you're looking at the center point, you're looking at the place that's considered the altar or the sacred space, the Holy of Holies, whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And this was high enough on those upper columns that I think it was inscribed in the older temple by somebody later.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it was part of the original older temple. But I do think that those who came later who put it there did so because the lower part of that temple is all underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And the Egyptian government has supposedly tried and tried and tried to pump it and to empty it out so they could excavate, and nobody's ever been able to successfully keep the water away. This is the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. Mm-hmm. Some days I believe that the government doesn't want it to be pumped, and other days I believe, well, it was a different era, a different time, the geology was different, who
mm-hmm.
knows.
Mm-hmm. So in a way it was a piece of graffiti that later somebody put up there just for us to
That would be my uneducated assumption.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
But it's etched into the granite and they're not really quite sure how the heck they did that. It's not just chiseled.
Right, but it isn't a deep etching.
Uh-huh.
It's a very light etching. It almost looks like it's painted on.
Uh-huh.
If you didn't know your way around etching, you would think it was painted on.
Mm-hmm. Somebody said maybe laser etching would be a way of describing
sure.
what it looks like.
So if you had advanced technology,
exactly,
and you could do that, you could do that. You
right.
would do that. And
right.
there's lots of stories out there about time travel
mm-hmm.
and advanced beings traveling back in time.
Exactly.
So...
yeah, there's a lot of theories that the so-called ET phenomenon is actually ourselves coming back
in time
to remind us of what we don't want to do.
Or haven't done,
yeah,
perhaps.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Those are real interesting, and it keeps us expanding. The metaphor for ascension for me is not so much that we're ascending to the heaven, but we are ascending in our view of things to have a much higher lofted view and more awareness of everything that's going on rather than having our nose down in the middle of
right.
everything.
That's very true. And it plays out in everything, just in, like in, even in traffic.
That's true, especially in traffic. Well, so the Flower of Life and sacred geometry are kind of hand in hand. I noticed that you also do things with CDs and you do take trips with people. The book that you wrote is kind of interesting, Genie in a Bottle, that seems to combine these things. Can you tell us a little bit about Genie?
Yes. A Genie in the Bottle was a body of knowledge that was coming to me for the last 10 years. Prior to that, I had known that I wanted to work with manifestation. And I'd read a lot of books out there just trying to get my arms around manifestation. And I was learning many things about how manifestation works. And what happened to me is I decided that I really wanted to write a book. But I also thought, who am I to write a book? I don't know anything. And so I thought, well, maybe if I teach a class and develop a seminar, then the book would write itself. So I began working with this concept. And I didn't even have a forum to teach it. And I belong to a professional organization in my corporate life. And so I decided to use the system that I had created to get my first speaking engagement to present this material. And I did the work that I do, and it's kind of like a little encapsulated formula, and didn't tell anybody. And then a month or so later, I was at my national organization I belong to, a National Society of Fundraising Executives, and I ran into an old friend, and I told her, I'd asked her if we could meet for lunch, because she had said that she was leaving the industry, and I thought it would be good to have a closure on our friendship and just kind of connect with her in a different way. And she didn't have time to see me, and I finally said, well, what about breakfast? Would you get up early the day you're flying out and have breakfast with me? So she agreed, and we sat down, and she told me about her new life and what she was going to be doing. And just because it felt safe and there was no longer going to be any competition, I told her about my dream to present to this national association my little formula for manifesting. And she said, well, you have to write a proposal for the education committee, and it has to be submitted to staff, and they have to approve it before they even look at it. And I thought to myself, well, that's obvious. Everybody has to do that for any association. So I said, oh, yeah, I knew that. And she said, yes, but if you're planning on presenting next year, their deadline is coming up in 3 weeks, and the education committee is going to meet 3 weeks after that. And if you don't get it submitted at this time, you'll miss your opportunity. And I said, wow, I didn't know that at all. I'm really glad to know that. And then she said, and if you submit for this year, I will speak in favor of it because I sit on the committee and it's my last meeting. I'd only told one person my heart's desire. And that one person was the right person to open the door. I still had to do my part. I still had to write a proposal and everything that had to happen. But the fact that I was in the right place at the right time, telling the right person, and that's one of the principles of the manifestation work, is you don't tell anybody. Mm-hmm. But there will come a time when you're put in a situation, you sit down on a plane, you sit next to the right person, mm-hmm. and synchronicities happen that show you, go for it right now.
Wow.
And be ready.
Wow. Well, how would you say that this work, Genie in the Bottle, relates to your work with the dolphins?
I like to tell a story. In the beginning of the book, I tell this story about how I had been swimming with the dolphins, and I had a few extras on my boat. I had like 13 people on my boat, and we had a few extra seats. And the dolphins had come, and there had been so many dolphins that everybody that had been in the water kind of scattered in all directions. And I was in one direction, and everybody in my group was in another. But there was one lady with me who wasn't part of my group. And the dolphins had been swimming with me for a while. And I was wearing one of those bandeau-type bathing suits, with no straps and no wetsuit. And they'd been swimming with me for a while. And as I'm snorkeling, my bra top keeps filling up with water and air. I keep pushing it down, trying to get it out of my way. And then the dolphins started to speed up. And you know how when they're swimming with you, they're swimming at a nice, leisurely pace. But when they're ready to leave, they just start going faster, and you can tell energetically, even if you're not talking to them mm-hmm. or they're not talking to you, they're going to leave. So I had been expressing how grateful I was, and I was telling them how much I enjoyed being with them, and when they started to speed up, I said, oh, please, just one more round. And they had been swimming in this big oval, with us. Mm-hmm. And at that exact moment, my bra top started to bother me again, so I just pushed it down to my waist, and the dolphins came back. And I was just in ecstasy because I got it that they heard me. And but still, I didn't have any proof. Then we get back on the boat, and everybody's on the boat, and this woman who's an extra looks at me in front of everybody, says, I noticed that the dolphins came back when you showed them your breast. So she wasn't one of my group, and yet she was my witness. So it was kind of fun. But what does sacred geometry have to do with the dolphins? I'm not exactly sure. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that there is a direct connection, probably through the ET connection and the geometry. Mm-hmm. One of the things I've noticed is in the last 5 years, we're getting a lot of pictures of orbs in our photography.
Digital cameras, yeah.
Not even digital. It could be regular film.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting orbs. And they're showing up in the sky, they're showing up in the sunset, they're showing up in weird places. And I'm not the only one seeing them. I bet you have too.
Sure. Well, on the film, I don't see them.
Right. We don't see them with the naked eye, but they're showing up on the film.
Right.
Now, here's one of the things about quantum physics that's part of my work. It has to do with both quantum physics and the sacred geometry. There's this whole belief system that what your brain is deliberately adding stuff to what you see. It's a known fact that both the travelers with Magellan and the travelers with Columbus, when they came to shore, the native peoples wanted to know where they came from because they could see the small boats, but they could not see the big boats because they had no reference point. So if we have no reference point to see orbs or to see, and let's say the orbs are either ETs or Ascended Masters or something other than us,
mm-hmm.
we have no reference point to see them. So we're seeing them on the film first so that our minds will start to allow us to see them in
mm-hmm.
real time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting point. And I think you're right. The dolphins, for me, do convey holographic imagery.
Exactly.
And people have reported more often than not that they see geometric shapes, diamond shapes, crystalline forms, and within those shapes that are just popping into their minds is raw information. And I think that's probably part of how this whole thing ties together. They seem to be very sophisticated in the way that they have organized their perception of the universe. And they're standing ready to share that information with us.
Mm-hmm.
We're beginning to see that on a molecular level, first of all, we're all water molecules.
Yes.
And the dolphins and the earth and the humans all share that commonality where we're mostly water molecules. The water molecules themselves have been observed are carriers of information, spins of quantum physics, or quantum energies. And so that within those quantum spins are geometric shapes and patterns which carry the patterns of information that we're going by.
Right.
So I think that's probably one of the things that I think ties those together for me anyway.
You've been listening to Dolphinville Radio, www.dolphinville.com. Thanks for listening.
So, well, dolphins channeling. Do you channel? Do you feel that you really channel the Ascended Master, Saint Germain, or any of the others when you go into your meditations?
I have been told that people can see beings behind me. Some people have even identified those beings as either El Mori or Saint Germain or the Ascended Masters. But I don't see myself as a channel.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't have a desire to do that. That's a little too... you got to be careful what you say you don't want, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure, sure.
But because my work is so much about empowering the individual to claim their divinity, I see that the information I'm getting is, it might be being told to me at the higher self level, but it is coming in through my higher self.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So my guidance is higher self guidance.
Okay. And that seems to be the connection to the Ascended Masters.
Yes.
Then.
Yes. And I have a big devotion to the Ascended Masters. I mean, I ask them for help every day. Mm-hmm. I teach people to ask for help every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the angels one time, when I first wrote out the script for the angel CD, and I had the flyer that was going to go into the CD itself,
mm-hmm.
you know, the printed flyer. And I said to them, you know, I know somebody's going to ask me this question, so I'm just going to ask you right out. Why can't you just ask the angels to come and help you once for the rest of your life?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you have to keep asking them every day? And the angel said to me, well, I told you, honey, when we got married 10 years ago, I loved you. Nothing has changed. And I burst out laughing because it was so real.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, okay, I get it. And then they showed me the sun going across the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, every day you get a clean slate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the sun rises and the sun sets. And when the sun sets, you get a clean slate.
Mm-hmm.
So that the reason you ask every day is because of free will. You have the privilege, the opportunity to
mm-hmm.
claim for yourself
mm-hmm.
whatever it is you're going to claim for yourself every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's your choice every day. So after that CD was published, they then came back and told me the rest of the story, which I thought was very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, if you skip a day here and there, it's not going to make any difference. We're still going to be there for you. because we didn't want you to print that.
Well, speaking of CDs, now you have 6 CDs to your credit.
Yes.
And each one of those are meditations, and you for
yes.
people learning devices for people. How would you
yes.
describe them?
That's a good word, a learning device. Again, because I'm about the my work is about the empowerment of the individual. What I'm doing is teaching people to build a momentum. Everything that I have put out there, you could do on your own.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like when I was growing up, you know, it was unthinkable to buy a bread dough and put it in the oven and let it rise and then bake it. You made it from scratch in the same way the cake mix. Well, my work is kind of like the cake mixes, you know. So I have an angel meditation where I take people through a process, and then there's a space where you're supposed to do your part, and then we come back in again. And each time, you know, we tell you about each of the 7 archangels, for example, and then you might ask Archangel Michael such and such. And there's a little background music,
mm-hmm.
and then you have to make your own prayer. But it's done in little segments, so people become invested. And what you pray to an angel about today might not be what you pray tomorrow. You know, if you have an issue going on with a family relationship, there's a section in the calls to Archangel Chamuel to ask Chamuel to help your family situation.
Hmm.
Or if you're having trouble having faith in yourself, you might ask Archangel Zadkiel for the absolute best you could possibly be. And then there's another CD with a chant on it that's very powerful that takes people through the clearing of the pranic tube and connecting with Mother Earth energy. And the energy is so powerful in clearing the pranic tube that I jokingly refer to it as a colonic for the pranic tube.
Colonic for the pranic.
And that's called Mantras for Ascension. And then the next CD after that was a CD that was dedicated to the crystal energy that's coming in the crystal children, but I was told to pair it with the energy of the Elohim. So there's a direct set of invocations again with crystal energy and Elohim energy.
These are meditations that have come spontaneously to you, or
guided meditations
given
right.
to you by the angels themselves.
Right. Or? Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
And they're guided meditations, and I do my research too, so I don't just rely on what I've been given. I'm validating it through whatever is available. Then I was in Egypt with one of my groups, and we did a toning CD in the King's Chamber, and that's a 2 CD set where we actually toned for about 73 minutes, and it was so long that we had to put on 2 CDs. So the first CD has a little instruction of what we were doing. Then it has the guided meditation we did at the beginning, because it was so filled with reverb you couldn't comprehend it. It was too difficult to use. And I created some background music for that. And then the third cut of the first CD is if you took the sound of the 72 minutes and made it into a ribbon and then chopped it up and stacked it. Yes, I can see the look on your face. That's exactly what it sounds like too. It is remarkable. It is so intense that I actually went back into the studio and toned over it to give you the bridge in.
Curiously, you're also describing the physical phenomenon that's above the King's Chamber. It's the ladle work that supports the structure above so that it doesn't collapse on itself.
Well, that's one of the things. But, you know what that structure looks like because you've seen drawings,
mm-hmm.
and you're a sound man. You know when you go into a sound studio, what do they have on the walls? They have sponges that are cut in unusual shapes, so that you won't get a standing wave ratio.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that one of the reasons why there's the stone is cut on one side but rough hewn on the other is to disperse the standing wave ratio. So you get the full spectrum of sound.
Do you believe as some that the King's Chamber itself obviously was not a tomb but had other purposes, perhaps as a teleportation chamber or a metaphysical stargate?
I like teleportation, actually. My sense of what it is it's a form of a stargate, but a teleportation chamber where people use the energy that synchronizes them somehow with an aspect of who they are that's more evolved. What people have found is that they have an out-of-body experience, so they're connecting with a much vaster version of themselves, and then they bring part of that back. And I've worked with the same tour company for a number of years. I've been to Egypt 6 times. Mm. And one of their business managers was waiting for me as I came down from the King's Chamber. And he gave me a big hug, which was a little bit unusual for this man, partly because he's Egyptian and partly just because of their culture. Mm. And I noticed it briefly, but then, you know, just ignored it. And then I went off to another place in Europe, and then I came back to Egypt. And when I came back to Egypt, I was with this man because he was escorting me from wherever I was going. And he said, "I have something I need to tell you. I've had this back injury for 6 or 7 months, and every healer that comes through here, I ask him or her to work on me. And I'll get better for a couple of days, and then it comes right back." And he said, "I knew if I was the first person to hug you when I came down from the King's Chamber that I would be healed." And he said, "Maureen, it's been 3 weeks and it's gone."
Do you regard yourself as an energy healer?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm a teacher.
Okay.
My job is to help people gain mastery over themselves,
mm-hmm.
to gain wisdom, to teach them how to fish, not to feed them fish.
Well, you cover such a wide spectrum of things. So we've talked about the geometry, certainly swimming with the dolphins is it's related. How do you feel that all of this, what's your primary focus in all of this?
My primary focus is the empowerment of the individual,
mm-hmm.
and to teach people that there are many ways to source.
Mm-hmm.
The ways I teach is one way.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other ways. And people can even have the spontaneous experience where they just have enlightenment and
mm-hmm.
they just arrive there.
Mm-hmm.
I also believe that there are an awful lot of ascended beings right here on the planet drinking beer, watching football games.
Yeah.
And that those people are holding space for the rest of us and they're giving us our chance to play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when people say, "Oh, you know, I'm married to this wonderful man, but you know, he's not interested in any of this stuff. I don't feel like I have a partner in this spiritual work, yada, yada." I just say, count your blessings. He's probably already been there, done that,
uh-huh.
and his only mission is to provide for you and to give you the space to make your own ascension and to have fun
mm-hmm.
and to not worry about some of the details that so many people have to worry about.
Mm. Well, that's a lovely way of bringing people back into their own gratitude mm-hmm. for what's really in their lives. One of the things I've always struggled with, and maybe it's a male thing about asking directions or something, asking for help has always been a challenge for me. And so many of the spiritual practices say, well, ask your angels, you know, or they're not doing it. They're playing cards until you start asking them for help. And I grew up as a competitive athlete, and I recognize the value of putting time, energy, and effort into something to get a result. And then it's yours. You own it. And
yes, and I've had people say to me, "Well, you know, if I have the angels help me, then it's not my own effort."
Mm-hmm.
And my response is, "Okay, take for instance 2 guys. They both graduate from college. One guy has met the woman he loves, and he wants to get married, but they're both going to go on to medical school. So the guy who marries his girlfriend goes to medical school, and his best friend goes to medical school. Now, the best friend works his way through medical school, and it turns out that the family of the woman he married is very well off, and maybe his father-in-law or his new uncle comes to him and says, 'Look, I believe medicine is so important, and I want you to know that we think you're a wonderful guy, and we're going to pay for your medical school. You do not have to work. You just put all your time on your studies.'" They both graduate. Who's the better doctor? Could be either one. You could say, "Well, the guy who worked his way through, he's a better doctor because he knows what real life is like." But then I would counter with, "Well, but the guy who didn't have to work, had all this time to study, he might know more." You know, you can't know for sure.
Well, then there's the theory that Western medicine is all about drugs anyway. We don't need to go there. That's a great analogy, though, and I think it's true. It's whatever probably your heart is leading you to. The synchronicities are the signposts, if you will, that
yes,
you're on the
are.
Right path.
Yes, they
and
are.
And the meeting of the person, whether or not it's somebody who can help you on your path. And if you have enough courage to accept that help is there.
Okay, now you were a competitive athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Do you golf?
I have golfed.
Okay. If I said to you, well, I'm friends with Tiger Woods and I can get you a couple of free lessons,
mm-hmm.
would you pass it up?
I might be so intimidated by by him that I would. But no, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, of course, you jump
and
on that.
And the price is right.
Yeah, I understand. Well, we've had a wonderful go around here. I really like the information that you're putting out. Your energy is wonderful. You've got a great aura around you. And yeah, I do see a couple of characters standing back there. I don't know them personally or identify them, but they seem to be dolphin-esque in their joy and their bliss. What I would like to do is wrap up this interview with the opportunity for you to bring the audience into the space that you create for your meditations. Then maybe segue into something that would be from one of your recorded CDs so that the audience would have even a two-tiered experience as to what you like to do.
Okay.
All right.
So for those of you who are listening, if you'll take a moment and close your eyes and allow yourself to drop your shoulder and slow your breathing down just a little bit. Now allow yourself to remember a time when you have held a beloved being in your arms. An infant or a pet. It has to be some little being if it's a human, because you want to pick someone who you don't care whether they smile back at you. You're just so in love with them as in their littleness. Or a pet, which is another very powerful place. And put your arms around this pet. Even if it's a horse, you could imagine yourself putting your arms around the horse and saying to this being, I love you. And hear yourself say that. And feel what it feels like to have that statement. And then as you feel that feeling, allow that feeling in your chest, in your heart, to grow a little bit. And then give that feeling a name. The name might be a color like pink or red that's directly related to the heart. You could use the color green, the color of the heart chakra. Or you might use the name of the pet. That helps you evoke that feeling. Each time you bring that feeling up, say the name, because what you will do is teach yourself to be able to bring that feeling up on demand with that name. Now, ask your higher self to join you right where you are, in your heart. And your higher self can be anything that comes forward as your higher self. So you might see your higher self as an angelic being. You might see your higher self as a beautiful light. Many people see the higher self as a beautiful purple energy. Just allow the higher self to come in and be there with you. Even if you don't have an experience that's visual, you might get an experience that is felt in the body. Now ask your higher self to show you how much you are loved. So you might say something like, higher self, show me how much I am loved. Then ask your higher self, teach me what I need to learn today. Help me find my way easily. And help me bring more of my higher self energy into my physical form, no matter what I do. Then we can ask the Ascended Masters, El Moria, Saint Germain, Kithumi, and the angelic realm, and all the beings of light who are here to help us remember who we are, to step into our space, into our world, and to assist us everywhere we go with all of our interactions, that we might be a blessing to all we encounter. And as you feel that, allow yourself to feel grateful that you have been able to influence people in a positive way. And be grateful for the opportunity to be in life, to be in a body, and to have the wonderful experiences we have being human. And then thank your higher self for being there, and all the other beings who are here, known or unknown to us. And then you can open your eyes when you're ready.
This is Dolphinville Radio.
Before you now stands the radiant electric blue energy known as Michael, the Archangel, the Protector and Balancer. Archangel Michael is very real indeed, having been called upon throughout the ages to keep people safe from harm, helping them to be strong in times of trouble, and protected from their enemies. Archangel Michael is a favorite throughout history for good reason. Archangel Michael can be experienced in many ways. If you invite him in, his energy will fill you with power, strength, directness, clarity, protection, and strengthen your connection with divine will. He will assist you in bringing in balance, order, clear-headedness, and direct purpose into your life. You might choose to say, Archangel Michael, clear me of my doubt and fear. Replace these emotions with your credible clarity, strength and conviction, supportive assertiveness, and self-assurance. For those of you who are already wielding power by virtue of your life circumstances, you can ask Michael to assist you in the right use of power, so that your strength is a blessing to all you meet and not a burden. Ask, Archangel Michael, restore the balance of power that I express and feel. Create in me the loving awareness of my power so that I may lead wisely and with compassion. Mighty Michael is closely aligned with the energy of the will of God. You can ask Michael to put his electric blue armor around you and his hand-wielding sword over your hand to assist you in all of life's challenges. Archangel Michael will step into any situation and make it right by his energy of balance and alignment to God's will. If there are circumstances in your life that you are inclined to postpone or procrastinate about, ask Michael, give me the strength to move on situations and desires where I have lacked the willpower or strength to do so. Give thanks as you receive Michael's energy in your life. His energy fades and a new energy begins.
One time, when I asked a woman to bring in her higher self, and then I asked her to experience her higher self giving her this feeling of unconditional love, she said she felt this tremendous wave of love, and it took her right out of her body into a place out in the stars, and then it was followed by such a sense of bliss. Mm-hmm. And I tell people, if you do nothing else, if you will ask your higher self to show you how much you are loved, it will change how you feel about you. When you change how you feel about you, it changes how you feel about everybody else.
Yeah. Amen to that. And that is true empowerment, isn't it? Mm-hmm. When you feel the love from above and how it filters through everything and makes everything whole. Well, this has been a whole lot of fun.
I agree.
And I really enjoyed. And I would recommend that people who respond and resonate with what Maureen has been saying to go ahead and check out her website. I did give you the name of MaureenSaintGermain.com. She also made it easy for people to remember, because she's in the sacred geometry and angels. It's a simple angleangel.com. Angleangel.com. So either one of those will get you to the same place. There's information that she's shared today, also a listing of her CDs and some of the workshops that will be coming up. She travels all over the world giving these things and some of the exciting trips and journeys that she plans for the upcoming season, if you will. So I want to really express my gratitude and appreciate what you've been sharing. And hopefully when you come back the next time, you'll have some more interesting stories to share, and we can maybe try to join together and give the radio audience another clue as to how they can find some ascended bliss and joy to the compliments of Marie St. Germain. So thank you so much for sharing.
It's been fun.
And this is Douglas Dolphinus here in Dolphinville, and I'll be with you next time. So until then, be well and swim free. See ya.